When you come to an anniversary celebration, whether it's the 100th anniversary of the church or whether it's a wedding anniversary or whatever anniversary it might be, by necessity, you have to look back to the past where it all began. That's called history. And there are two main views that people have of history. There are some people who really dislike history. It wasn't their favorite subject in school. There are other people who just love it and who want to go back and remember those things, those special events, those special moments, those special people. And I don't know where you are. I'm in the second category. I think the first category, people don't like history, they can be summed up in a little story about a young couple on their honeymoon in Washington, D.C. They'd never been there before. So they went and they got a cab, and the cab driver drove them around the city, and they saw all the wonderful sights. There was the Washington Monument, and there was the Lincoln Memorial, and there was the White House and the Capitol building. And they drove by the National Archives building, on which is the motto taken from Shakespeare's play The Tempest. Those words that tell us the past is prologue. They read that on the building. The past is prologue. So this man read it a couple times to his wife. The past is prologue. And then he said, I wonder what those words mean. The cabbie turned his head to the side and said, Mac, it means that you ain't seen nothing yet. Well, that's a demeaning of history. You ain't seen nothing yet. What is to come? What is to come is more important than what's happened in the past. We can just discount the past. Well, obviously, I don't take that view of history. I hope you don't. And the psalmist did not take that view of history. The psalmist said that God has done wonderful things in the past. The past is permanent. We can stand on it because God has done wonderful things in the past. We don't often see some of those things anymore. We don't see the foundation of this sanctuary building anymore. A lot of us remember when it was poured. You don't see it anymore, but it holds us up today. And the psalmist is saying the same way that these wonderful acts of God hold us up. They remind us of God's faithfulness then and God's faithfulness now and who we are. Those wonderful acts of God. Now, you might ask, well, what are those wonderful acts that he's talking about that the generation before told him so he could pass them on to another generation? What are these wonderful acts? Well, Pastor Mark and I and anyone who attended seminary had to learn a special word. It's a compound German word. The word is Heilsgeschichte. Geschichte in German is history, and Heils means over or sacred, and so you put it together and it says sacred history. And this is simply what it means. You take all those people, all those acts, all those wonderful things that happened, and look at each one as a little pearl, a little beautiful pearl. But they're not disjointed. All these things have been joined together to make a beautiful necklace. They're all connected, you see. So therefore, this history is not just random events. God has been working in this, and so it is holy history. It's sacred because this is the arena where God works. Now, our forefathers and foremothers of an earlier age, they used another phrase. They spoke about the mirabilia Dei, literally the miracles of God. And that's what the psalmist is reminding us of. He tells us to remember the past and these miracles of God. Now, you have every reason to ask, well, Pastor, what does that mean? What are some of these miracles of God? Well, there's a miracle of creation where ex nihilo, out of nothing, God called everything into being. We have scientific understandings for how it happened, but we still have to ask why and what's behind it all. And that always takes us back to the Creator God, even in this scientific age. Or we think about God making covenant with Abraham, saying, I'm going to bless the whole world through your ragtag little family. They'll grow to be like the sands of the sea. Everyone will be blessed through you, Abraham. Or when the people went into slavery, the nation of Israel into Babylon, that when Cyrus and the Persians, read Iranians today, they're the old Persians, when they defeated Babylon, through Cyrus, the king of Persia, God worked. Isaiah called him God's son. And he said to the people, go back home. Go back to Jerusalem. Rebuild the temple. Rebuild the walls. Rebuild everything. Have a good life. And through Ezra and Nehemiah, they went back and rebuilt the walls, the temple, and they established the patterns of worship once again, and God blessed them. But then Persia was defeated by Greece, and we had that golden age of philosophers like Socrates, Aristotle, and Plato, and all the others that gave us some of the understandings we have even for our government today. Then after that, Rome ascended and defeated Greece, and then we had that 700 years called the Pax Romana, the Roman peace. The world never before or since has seen such a wonderful time of peace, 700 years. If you could speak Greek or Latin, you could travel around the world. Those were the two languages. And during the time of the Roman emperors, Jesus was born and taught and was crucified and rose and established the church. And the church began to spread. And under the Roman emperors, the Christians were persecuted. If you go to the Colosseum in Rome, you stand there and pick out some of that dirt and remind yourself that the Christians actually died right in that spot, right there. They died right there. And then you think of the fathers of the church rising up during that time, and the bishops, many who were martyred at different spots around those places in Europe for the faith. But in the great councils, they hammered out what the faith would become and how it would be transmitted from generation to generation. And you had the Nicene Creed and the Creed of Athanasius and some of the other great creeds that held the church together. And around the year 400, Rome itself fell after 700 years. The Vandals from the north, from Germanic tribes, swept down into Italy and destroyed Rome. And Augustine at that time wrote his magnum opus, The City of God, the Civitas Dei. And he said that even though this city is being destroyed, God is building something else that will never be destroyed. And the Dark Ages came upon Europe, at a time when the lights of learning were put out one by one and civilization almost ended. In the year 1000, the church is divided into the Eastern Orthodox Church and the Western Church under the leadership of the Pope in Rome. The church tried to reform itself and could not, and the reformers who rose up like Huss and Wycliffe and others, they were martyred because they tried to reform the church. And then in 1517, Luther came along and gave the people the Old Testament translated now from Latin and from Hebrew into German, and the New Testament from Greek to German, and the common people could read the Bible for the first time in their own language. And denominations formed, the Anabaptists and Lutherans in Germany and in Scotland, the Presbyterians, and in Switzerland and other places, the Reformed Church. England held on for a while, still following the Pope until King Henry VIII could not have a male heir, and so he wanted to divorce his wife, and the Pope said no, and Henry said, then I'll be my own Pope, and I'll have my own church, established the Church of England. And out of that, finally, there came Samuel Wesley and his two boys, John and Charles. And John had a heartwarming experience on May the 24th, 1738, began to preach in Britain, began to send young preachers to America, circuit riders they were called, going out in all the little places, out in the villages and out in the woods, and some of them came to Homosassa. And down at old Homosassa, they got together and formed a little congregation, built a little rude church, and then later they built another church, and finally they moved up to this ground, this sacred holy ground here. And here they built the building, and then they finally built this building, and then later the Fellowship Hall. And you and I are part of that glorious, wonderful history, the things that God has done, the marvelous, mighty works of God. And we're part of that, and we glory in that. But you say, oh, that's the past. That's true. There came a time when this congregation, when John Denmark was a pastor here, said we need a bigger building. And the plans were drawn for this building, and John moved on, and I became the pastor here, and this church was built. New ministries were formed. Later on, Mark Whitaker came, and the church grew even faster and had even more ministries than they continue today. But I look back at that time we were going through when this sanctuary came into being. It was very difficult to move from the past into the presence. I remember one of the dear ladies of the church came to me one day and said, "Pastor," with a tremble in her voice and tears in her eyes, she said, "When we move out of our building over to that new sanctuary where we're going to rattle around in there, it's so big," she said, "will we lose the warmth we have here? Will we lose the closeness? Will we lose the love we have in this building?" And I saw she was concerned. I knew other people were concerned. So I began to ask myself, what could we do about that? And I remember reading about the Tennessee Valley Authority when they flooded the Tennessee Valley back in the 1930s to create dams so that they could make cheap hydroelectric power for people in that impoverished area. The people, of course, had to move out. The government built little houses for them up in higher ground because they had to flood the valley. And everyone moved except one old commergent. He would not move no matter what. Sheriff went out, pounded on the door of his little cabin. The man came to the door, and the sheriff said, "Mister, you've got 10 days to get out of here. If you're not out, we're coming out with some deputies. We're going to put you in leg irons and handcuffs. We're going to take you out." The old man said, "You better have a double load or 2 weeks, because I've got one there, and I ain't going." Sheriff went back and reported what happened, and a more diplomatic soul in the Tennessee Valley Authority. So let me go out and talk with him. Went out, went up, knocked on the door, and the gentleman came out, and he said, "Sir, I'm here to ask you a question. Why won't you move out to this beautiful new little house the government has built for you? Why won't you move into it?" It was a hot summer day. He said, "Come on, son, I want to show you something." Took him inside, and even though it was so hot, here was a fireplace with a blazing fire in it. "You see that fireplace? See that fire?" "Yes, sir, I do." "My granddaddy built this cabin. He built a fire in that fireplace. He never let it go out. He told my daddy before he died, don't you ever let the fire go out. My daddy never did. And before he died, my daddy said to me, don't you ever let that fire go out. And I haven't. And that's why I ain't going nowhere." The man said to him, well, "Suppose we came out with a pickup truck and a big wash tub, and we put your coals in there with some wood and took it to your new little house where there's already wood in your fireplace and transferred the fire there. Would that be all right?" "You'd do that for me?" "Well, yes, we would." "Well, if you'll do that for me, I'm ready to move today." And as the diplomat went down the steps of that little cabin, heard the old man mutter to himself, "The only thing I ever wanted was to keep the fire from going out." And the fire did not go out when we moved into this place. New ministries came into being, and I made the mistake of the last service of mentioning some of those names. I won't do it today. I'd love to. But I started mentioning names of the people, on, and what they contributed to the ministry of this church, how they kept the past alive for a new generation, how they moved the stained glass window over here, how they took the bell and gave it a prominent place out here. All those things as a way of honoring the past and telling God's goodness to a new generation. I do have to mention one person. His name is Don Ainsworth. Colonel Ainsworth was the chairman of the building department when this sanctuary was planned and built. His wife gave me this psalter. Just the Psalms. He wanted me to have this. Don's mother gave it to him. It was printed in 1859, 3 years before the Civil War began. The war between the states, or as they say in the South, the war of Northern aggression. Anyway, 3 years before the Civil War began, I have an idea that Don's grandmother bought it and gave it to her daughter. And then it was passed along to what came to Don. It was given to him just before he entered the war and flew those 30-some missions over Germany, B-17 pilot. I don't know, nothing's written in it, but I like to think that this was in his kit, in his pilot's kit when he was flying those missions. but came along to me. And I tell you that because I read from it today to tell you that it was passed from the past into his present and into me, into his future. And now I can pass along to the next generation and tell the wonderful things that God has done in this place. The past had a power to it as we moved in, or rather the present had a power to it as we moved from the premise of the past into the power of the present. I had a professor one time, a young pastor, complained to him and said that people in my church just won't, they won't get up and do anything. They just won't leave the past. And this professor wrote on the board these words: the past is powerful, but the present is more powerful than the past. And it is. The present has a real power to it. And we saw that. But then there's the future for us to think about. How do you minister to these children? I think the most glorious thing that I can remember my time here was the time when we had Mr. Wesley's Neighborhood. Some of you remember that. A woman in the neighborhood said to me one day, she said, "You know," she said, "Preacher, I'm really concerned about my family." And I said, "What are you concerned about?" She said, "Well, you know, I have four children, and we do okay during the school months when the children get free breakfast and free lunches, but when they're out of school, I've got to provide, that's four times two, that's eight more meals a day I've got to provide throughout the summer, and I don't know if we're going to have the money to do it." And I began to think there must be other families in the same situation, and what could we do to help them? And so began to think, well, what if we had some kind of a feeding program where you had a free lunch and or a free breakfast and a free lunch for them, and but you just can't come and feed them, send them home. And what if we had like a vacation Bible school and extended it through the summer, and what if we taught them Bible stories and taught them songs and brought in special guest speakers for them and took them on field trips and did all those things? And 100 people, 100 adults in this church signed up to be part of that. 10 a day. You served every 10th day through the summer. And I got to just mention a couple people. Walter Brightman. Walter Brightman was a wonderful businessman, always a promoter. Walter Brightman got the idea of having a little reviewing stand. It was the year of the Olympics. And so at the end of Mr. Wesley's Neighborhood, the children were allowed to stand on this little reviewing stand. Won the medal, that was a gold medal, silver medal, and a bronze medal, and their picture was taken. Then he rotated them so that the picture that the child took home of themselves, it was the one when they were standing in the middle and got the gold medal. They even had gold medals, medals around their necks. It was wonderful. Don't know where he got them, it was wonderful. And I remember big old Bill Gilbert out there who played semi-pro ball, and Bill, the left-handed out there pitching the ball to those children. They hit that ball and run, and a seed was planted that they were loved. And they took those pictures home of the medal. And they, maybe for one of the first times, were affirmed and said, "You count for something. You mean something to us." And so they were pulled into a future now that included God's love for them. It was a wonderful time to see that. This congregation always valued the children. Sometimes there weren't many, but wherever there were, they always valued the children. Mind of a missionary couple in China after World War II, the communists had taken over. More and more restrictions were put upon them. One day he was arrested, told that they'd have to leave China. They had 48 hours. They could only take 200 pounds with them. He went home, told his wife, got the bathroom scales out, began to weigh things, what they could take, what they had to leave. He got it down exactly, 200 pounds. The authorities knocked on the door 48 hours later. "You ready to go?" "Yes, we are." "Did you weigh everything?" "Yep, 200 pounds exactly." Then one of the authorities said, "Did you weigh the children? Did you weigh the children?" They began to understand the value of the children. Did you weigh the children? You know, this future calls us to another 100 years. You and I won't be around to see all that. But the seeds we plant now will bear wonderful returns in the future. Ben Franklin, before his death, bought some bonds for the city of Philadelphia, $1,000 worth. They could not be redeemed for 200 years. 200 years later, right after our bicentennial celebration, they were redeemed at the price of, if I remember, $15 million. He planted for the future. And that's what you and I are called up to do, to plant the future, to... What is that? You hear that noise? Well, anyway, you and I are called to plant... There it is again. I know it. Those people out there, they're coming up Old Homosassa. Some of them are in ox carts, and some are walking, and some are on horses, and there's more Model Ts coming up, and there's some cars right before World... There's some World War II cars up there coming, and there's Don Ainsworth in the procession with that maroon Pontiac he used to drive, and there's Walt Brightman coming, still has those medals in his hand. They're all coming up, and they're singing. I almost have the tune. They're singing. Oh, for a... That's what they're singing. They want us to sing with them. Can you sing the song with them? Can you be part of the processional? Oh, for a thousand tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise, the glories of my God and King, the triumphs of His grace. Isn't it wonderful to be part of that? Thanks be to God.